will be about quotient rings, ring homomorphisms. These are things which we haven't yet tested. Things like properties for quotient rings, say, show that a quotient ring is an integral domain by showing that the ideal is a prime ideal or so. And the rest about groups. Yes, with groups we haven't yet done that much. So basic, and I mean the kind of problems, what was on the homework, clearly some of them were far longer, and on the current homework sheet there is a series of problems there. Yes, I'm not going to test Reed Solomon codes because they are there just as an application, but basically for anything sensible to test there, you would have to have access to much more computation than you will have during the exam. Other questions? Sorry?
I have one about the homework.
Yeah.
Could you go over an example of a module being a group? A module being a group? You had two on one of the problems. You don't need to do those specifically.
Sure, we can go through these. So we look at numbers, and we look at a set of numbers with modular operations. We want this to be a group. And we want to test, is it a group? So let's say I look at the numbers 1, 2, 3, and my operation is multiplication modulo 4. Okay, for this being a group, I need to show it's closed under multiplication. So if I take the product of two elements, I lie again in this set. And if I try this out, I can observe that if I multiply 2 with itself, I have 2 by 2. 2 times 2 is 4. Modulo 4 is 0, and that is not in the set. So this will not be a group. Or another way how you could argue is to say you don't have an inverse for 2. 1 and 3 are mutually inverse. No, sorry, 1 is inverse of itself because 1 times 1 is 1. 3 is inverse of itself because 3 times 3 is 9 modulo 4 is 1, but 2 does not have an inverse. 2 by 2, 2 times 2 is, well, would be 0, which even doesn't lie in the set. And one way how you can look at this is basically the inverses here are exactly the inverses which we had when we looked at multiplication modulo. It's exactly the same concept of multiplicative inverse. And we had seen there an element has an inverse if and only if it has GCD1 with a modulus. So the fact that 2 doesn't have GCD1 with 4, that's basically what's dooming this to become a group. What we did is we defined something in general. We had which I called U of 4, which was defined to be the units of the integers modulo 4. And what are the units? These are the numbers which have GCD1. So we would have here 1 and 3, where our operation is multiplication modulo 4, and that is a group. But we can't add 2 to it. The other example where we have 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and multiplication modulo 5. Yes, this set is closed under multiplication, but 0 does not have an inverse. Right? Because 0 times something is always 0 and will never give me 1. So 0 has no inverse, so it is not a group. Indeed, if I look at the units modulo 5, so what do I get there? I get the numbers which have GCD1 with 5, that would be 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they indeed would form a group. It's closed under multiplication. Well, that's pretty clear. Because the integers modulo 5 are an integral domain, I don't have zero divisors, so the product of any two non-zero elements can't give me zero. So that is closed under multiplication. I have a 1, namely just 1 is the rule of the identity element there. And I have inverses. 1 times 1 is 1, so 1 is its own inverse. 4 times 4 is 16, modulo 5 is 1, so 4 is its own inverse. And 2 times 3 is 6, modulo 5 is 1, so 2 and 3 are mutually inverses. So that indeed is a group, and it is an abelian group. I could actually look at a subset here if I would look just at the numbers 1 and 4, modulo, and look at multiplication modulo 5. They still form a group. This is a subgroup. And we can use the subgroup test. What we need to check is the products are in there. Well, the products are 1 times 1, 1 times 4, 4 times 4, well, and 4 times 1, but clearly the multiplication here is commutative, so we don't need to test both of them. And we just observe these products are all in there, and we test the inverses. The inverse of 1 is 1, and the inverse of 4 is 4 in this particular case, because 4 times 4 is 16, modulo 5 is 1. Careful with these inverses. Talking about saying the inverse of 4 is some number just makes sense if we agree on working modulo 5. If I was working modulo 7, there the units modulo 7 are the numbers coprime to 7, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But the inverse of 4 is not anymore 4, it's something else, which I can compute with the extended Euclidean algorithm. It doesn't have here, it just happens to be the same. So talking about numbers and modulo arithmetic and talking about inverses as we had earlier only makes sense if we fix the modulus. If we go to another modulus, things are completely open again. Okay, does this answer your question? Other questions? Yeah? Yeah?
Envelope. Mm-hmm. So, I could go through and construct the multiplication table.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Are we supposed to be able to look at the properties of that group and be able to, like, from the multiplication table, be able to tell that you can go without A, or there's ways to do less steps than what they can come up with?
Okay. I mean, but basically what this problem is about is just the idea that a group is closed under multiplication, and the multiplication is associative. So what you can observe is just instead of here is a part in the process where I'm doing B and C together, so I could delete these both and could instead do A, because that happens to be the product. So this way I could make it faster, or I can just observe vice versa the fact that A is the product of B and C, so I don't need to do A. I could compose A from B and C. Okay, now to know exactly what the best order of doing it is a little bit trying out. And there I basically just was hoping that with 4 elements, you really don't have that many choices to do this. In general, the question to ask, could I, if this had more operations, if you had more symmetry operations, how can I throw some out and just leave some so that I have a short way of expressing everything from products of these, is something hard. And we haven't really seen a method how to do this for an arbitrary group. So this is very introductory problem which just happens to work because there are so few operations. Other questions? If you have questions, please don't be shy in asking. I'm happy to go through things, but I don't want to bore you with working on the board on stuff which you understand. Or if there are questions about the new homework or... Yeah? Yeah? Yes. Yes. Are the permutation, okay, S5 are the permutations of the points 1 to 5. Okay, let's probably, it might be easiest, let's look at something similar there. Okay. Let's say I take as group S4, and now I look at all the elements, let's say I look at a set U, which consists of all permutations P in S4, so that, let's say, 3 to the P is equal to 3. What do I mean by this? By this, I mean the image of 3 under P, and sometimes people write this as P of 3, and that would really mean the same. Okay, I look at those elements, and I ask, does this form a subgroup? Right? I think that's now very similar to what I'm asking in that problem. So, does this form a subgroup? Is U a subgroup of G? Okay. So, to check whether it is a subgroup, I have to use the subgroup test. Well, I can also show that it's a group, but it's easier to do the subgroup test. So, what do I need? I need first, it's not empty. And to show that it's not empty, typically the identity element is the easiest way, because if it is not empty, it certainly must contain the identity element. If it is a subgroup, it must contain the identity element. It contains an element, it contains its inverse, so it must contain the product of this element with its inverse, which is the identity. So unless you have a real good guess that you could say, oh, this element I want to have in there, the identity is the easiest one to try, because you know it must be in there. And in general, the identity is an element which is easy to work with. So the first thing is U is not the empty set, because the identity permutation I claim is in U. Why is the identity permutation in U? Because if I take 3 and I apply the identity permutation, I get 3 again. That's what the identity permutation does. It maps every point to itself. So clearly it will map 3 to 3. So the identity permutation is in U. Okay. Next, I need to show that the product of any two permutations is in there, right? If I have... So let's take two permutations. Let's say P and Q are elements in U, and I need to show that P times Q is in there. Okay, so that's what the general subgroup test says. That's what I need to show. Okay, now to do this, I need to look at the concrete example. How is actually this set U defined? If it's defined by listing elements, I basically have to go through the list of elements and have to go through all the pairs. It's not that particularly interesting to do. And I wouldn't want to do this for something more than 2 or 3 elements. And we'll see soon an easier way of dealing with this. But here it is defined by a property. And that means we have to test the property. This is very similar to what we did with subrings. It's just here, now we don't have polynomials which have value 0 somewhere or so. We have, and we don't add the polynomials, we have permutations, and we compose the permutations. But it really is, the principle is exactly the same as what we did there for subrings. Okay, So if P and Q are in U, what does this mean? This means that the image of 3 under P is 3, and the image of 3 under Q is also 3. Right? Because that's my defining property here. Okay, so now I want to show that P times Q is in U. How do I show this? Well, again, I need to show this defining property. So I need to look at the image of 3 under the product P times Q. What is this? Yes. Yes. It will be 3. And the reason for this is that the product of permutations is defined as composition of mappings. The product P times Q is the permutation which first applies P and then applies Q. Right? That's how we define the product. So this is the same as taking 3 and first applying P and then applying Q. Okay. And now I can use this fact. The image of 3 under P is 3. So this is again the image of 3 under Q, which also happens to be 3. And indeed, as you noted already, 3 is its own image. So that shows that P times Q is again in the set. Okay. The last step is I need to show that inverses are in there. So step 3 is let P be an element in U, and I need to show that P inverse is an element in U. Okay. So again, if P is in U, I know, and that's basically all I know, that the image of 3 under P is again 3. Right. So why is P inverse in U? What I would need to show is I need to calculate the image of 3 under the inverse of P, right? That's what I need to calculate. Okay. So how is the image of elements under the inverse of P defined? So the definition there is that X under P is equal to Y if and only if the image of Y under P inverse is equal to X. That's the definition of the inverse. Okay. If I now look at my property and I set X and Y both equal to 3, as I set X equal to 3, the image of 3 under P is 3, so this holds for X and Y both being equal to 3. So from this I can conclude, together with this definition, that the image of 3 under P inverse is also 3. Right? If the image of 3 under P was 4, I could not tell anything about the image of 3 under P inverse. Well, I could just tell that it's not 3. I could tell something about the image of 4 under 3 inverse. But since it's here the same, I can actually make a statement about this, and I can calculate this, and now this tells me, yes, indeed, this is equal to 3. So this shows that P inverse lies again in the set U. So I've tested the set is not empty. If I have two elements in there, their product is in there. If I have an element in there, its inverse is in there. So that shows this set. So together, I have that U is a subgroup of S4. I could go and enumerate the elements if I wanted to. Just as a practice for permutations, I could enumerate the elements of this set U, but this is not a good approach for showing that it is a subgroup, because that's potentially a lot of work, and if we work with an element list, checking that the products in there is in general far more work. But just for illustration, let me enumerate the elements here. What do I have? I have the identity permutation. I have the permutation exchanging 1 and 2. I have the permutation exchanging 1 and 4. I have the permutation exchanging 2 and 4. Basically, I can do any permutations on the points 1, 2, and 4. I just can't touch the point 3 because I want 3 to stay fixed. Right? So I also get the 3 cycle 1, 2, 4 and the 3 cycle 1, 4, 2. And that's it. These 6 elements would be in this subgroup. Again, so I can, from this, I could tell this subgroup U has order 6. We know the order of G, the order of S4 is 24, because it is 4 factorial. In general, the full symmetric group has order n factorial. So the order is 4 factorial, and I just want to mention 6 divides 24. This is this divisibility property, which at some point we want to prove. Okay. Let me also give you an example. Let's say I change my example. So let's say V would consist of those permutations P and S4 so that the image of 3 under P would be equal to 4. Okay. Now, if I wanted to show that it is not a subgroup. Well, the first thing which I might observe is if I'm trying to do my test that it's not empty and I try it with the identity, it's going wrong, right? The identity clearly does not map 3 to 4. It maps 3 to 3. So that's a very good indication that this is probably not a subgroup. If the identity will not work, that shouldn't hold. Okay, now we have two possibilities to work with this. We have one possibility, and I'll do this in a moment. We can prove a lemma which says if we have a subset which does not contain the identity element of the group, it is not a subgroup. And we can just state that and we are done. The other thing what we can do is we can actually show that some other properties are violated. And the easiest is to do, is say to look at, well, this really doesn't matter. I can choose any of these properties. So let's look at elements there. Again, to show that it's violated, I don't need all elements. If I can give you one element and show that the inverse is not in there, I'm done. It won't be a subgroup and I don't need to show more. But just for illustration, let me give you all the elements in this set. So all the permutations which map 3 to 4, that's the permutation which maps 3 to 4, that certainly maps 3 to 4, 1, 3, 4 maps 3 to 4, 2, 3, 4 maps 3 to 4, if I swap 1 and 2, and swap 3 and 4, that will map 3 to 4. Okay, are there others I can do? Sorry? This is a product of 2. These are not, this is just one permutation. Yeah. There should be 2 more. I could, okay, 3, 4. One. Oh, yeah. I have 4 points, so I can do 4 cycles. I can do 1, 2, 3, 4, and I can do, I can do basically 2, 1, 3, 4, but we would typically write this as 1, 3, 4, 2. Okay, and these are all the elements. There are 6 permutations there. Okay. At the moment, there isn't really any good, apart from the fact that you're probably not surprised that it's the same number, but we will show later that the number is the same. And basically what FF exposed there is a coset in the case of groups. So we will see later that in the case of groups, cosets actually can be described somehow in a nice way if our subgroup has the property that it consists of elements which map one point to itself, The cosets basically will correspond to the elements which map that point to some other point. Okay, but we'll see this later more properly. Anyhow, I just wanted some elements. So let's take this element. Let's say this is my element P, right? Then P is in V. What is the inverse of P? Right, now I have a concrete permutation that I can just tell what its inverse is. How do I invert it? I need to revert the order of the cycle. So this is 4-3, and traditionally we would just move it cyclically around to have the smallest number on the in the first position. So this is 3-4, which actually happens to be the same. Sorry, that was wrong. Not a good element. Sorry, I was too eager to show something and that didn't work. No, I need to take this one here. So let's say P is 1-3-4. Then what is P inverse? We need to revert the order of the cycle. That's 4-3-1. And we would traditionally more write this by moving the 1 in the first position as 1-4-3. Right? That's the inverse of this permutation P. This permutation is clearly in V. But what does the inverse do? If I look at the image of 3 under P inverse, what is this? Well, the image of 3 under this permutation is 1, which is not the same as 4. So this set is not closed under inverses. And so it can't be a subgroup. And that it's not empty, and that the product of some elements might still lie in there, doesn't really help it. It still is not a subgroup. Or that some elements happen to have an inverse in there. Doesn't help it. It still is not a subgroup. Okay. And that homework problem is rather similar to this here. Yeah. We have already seen that it might be useful to have a lemma which says if we have a subgroup, the one in the subgroup must contain the element one in the group, because then we could just note here and say the identity element is not in there, so clearly this can't be a subgroup. So, let's do this. Let G be a group, U a subgroup of G, then I claim the idea, called this element often E, so this is the identity element. The identity element of G must be an element of U. And why is this the case? Well, U is not empty. So, that is one of the conditions for subgroups, so it has an element, right? So I can conclude that there exists an element little x in U. Then I know, because U is closed under inverses, that x inverse is also an element in U, right? If I have a subgroup, I have an element in the subgroup, I also must have the inverse. So the inverse is also in there. And because I'm closed under products, I can conclude that x times x inverse, which of course is the identity element, must be an element of U. So that shows that if I have a subgroup, I always have the identity element in there. Okay, so that is... So with this lemma, I could just argue and say, and just test for the identity permutation and say, look, the identity permutation clearly does not lie in here, so it can't be a subgroup. Right, there is another problem in the homework which asks about showing that something is a subgroup, and that might look a little bit more complicated, but don't get scared by this, by the notation there. So, we take a subgroup H is a subgroup of G, and let's assume X is an element in G, and we consider the set X inverse HX, which consists of elements of product of the form X inverse times H times X, where H lies in H. And it asks about showing that this is a subgroup. Okay, so to show that it is one, you show, you want to show the identity is in this. So you need to show, you can write the identity in this form. Well, if you just take X inverse times identity times X, the identity vanishes in the product, and then X inverse times X cancels out. So the identity is clearly in there. To show that products are in there, you need to take the products. You need to look at the product of two such elements. So you look at the product of X inverse times H times X of another element, let's say X inverse times K times X, where H and K are in this subgroup H. And you take this product, and what will happen is you will see this X and the X inverse in the middle cancel out each other. And that's something which is very typical for happening when you do have calculations in groups. So you have this, these cancel out. Then you have the product H times K. But we assumed that H and K were elements of H, which was a subgroup. So here I can use that H times K must lie in H, because H is a subgroup. Okay, and then I have something X inverse times something in the subgroup times X, and that's exactly the form which I need to have. And for inverses it works similarly. There you just need to note, for the inverses, note that if I take X inverse times H times X and I invert it, what happens if I invert a product? And I think this is also part of a homework problem. If I invert a product, I can invert this by inverting all the factors, but I need to change the order. Why do I need to change the order? This is like when you're, this is like dressing or undressing. If you first put on the undershirt, then the shirt, then the vest. If you're undressing, you first need to take the vest off, then the shirt, then the undershirt. Right? The order changes to, and the same thing is happening there. So if I take the inverse of this, what do I need to do? I need to invert all the factors separately, so I get X inverse times H inverse times this inverse, X inverse inverse. And if I invert twice, we had this already a couple of times, and it's always the same situation. If we invert twice, we get the original element back. And since H is a subgroup, H inverse, if little h is in the subgroup, a little h inverse is also in the subgroup, so that deals with the situation of inverses. And the problem, so what you basically do is you refer, and that's why I gave this problem, you refer four times basically, four or five, in some way even six times, to the properties of subgroups, to each of the three properties of the test you refer twice. Once in, you show this property and you refer for your new set, and to show it, you once refer that this property held for the set H because it was a subgroup. That was is the reason for giving this particular problem. And with this product of inverting the product, if you had linear algebra, you've seen exactly the same already with matrices. If you want to invert a product of matrices, you can take the product of the inverse matrices, but you need to take the product in the reverse order. And that's, if you think of group elements as something like permutations, they mix up something. If I do two things, I first move this here and then I move that on here. To undo it, I first need to move this away. I can't move this away. Well, I could pull it out, but basically the idea is that I couldn't move this away first without disturbing possibly where this was. So that's why the inverse of a product, I need to revert the order. And that is really important that I need to revert the order there. That's traditionally a source of many errors in homeworks or exams. Similarly, because I, let me just note this, because I'm talking about these things in a group, I can assume that A times B, if I take the square of this, is A times B times A times B, but is in general not A squared times B squared. This is only the case if my group is commutative, if I have an abelian group. In general, this is not the same. And as an example, just consider A is the permutation swapping 1 and 2, and B is the permutation swapping 2 and 3. Then A times B is the permutation mapping 1 to 2 and then to 3. So 1 goes to 3, 3 stays fixed, goes to 2, 2 goes to 1, stays fixed. So it's this permutation. So if you take AB squared, you get another 3 cycle. That's not that hard to see. If you take A square and B square, they're both the identity. So A square times B square is the identity there. So this, in general, are different things. And if you argue with such an argument, that if you have an argument where you say set this equal, basically you're missing a very fundamental point, and there is typically not much left what one can rescue from your argument if you argue this for a group. So we're just two elements in a group, yeah. And I just mentioned this because this is a very popular mistake. I would hope you're not making it. Right. This was even a bit more about the further homework problem. Other questions? I mean, you're welcome. If for Monday you want to come with questions, you're welcome to come with questions. I'm happy to answer them. I'm just not going to come with a prepared set of things where I say, now I'll go again through these particular old problems. Okay, so we have the definition of a subgroup. We have already now seen, we did this last time, and we've now seen already quite a few examples of subgroups and testing whether something is a subgroup. So we had this subgroup test there. Let's probably do one more example of a subgroup, which might initially look a little bit more complicated, but it's really, again, just the subgroup test. It's the properties of the subgroup test, and it's just a little bit arithmetic with group elements, and in particular stressing the fact that groups are not necessarily commutative. So let's say G is a group. Let's take some particular element in there. Let's say I pick an element little g in G. And now I look at the following set. And this set actually has a name. This is called the centralizer of little g. Okay, and for the moment, this is just, you don't need to remember the name. It's just if you see it somewhere that you might remember, okay, that's was this name, is a set which is denoted by C for centralizer in G of little g. Okay, and what is this set? It's those elements H in G such that H times G is the same as G times H. Okay. And I'm picking this as an example because that is something where it's really crucial that we assume that our group is not commutative. If the group is commutative, this is just, again, the whole group. and we are done. Well, then it is a subgroup, but it's just the whole group. If my group is not commutative, this gives me proper subgroups. Okay, so my claim is, well, let's call it for now just U, so we don't always have to need to write this messy expression. So my claim is U is a subgroup of G. So to show that it is a subgroup, I need to show it's not empty. If I have two elements, the product is in there. And if I take an element, the inverse is in there, right? Okay, so first, not empty. And to show that it's not empty, again, it's easiest to take the identity element. So consider I claim that the identity element is in there. How do I test that it's in there? By checking this property, right? So I look at E times G, and I will need, on the other hand, need to look at G times E, and I need to show that they are the same. Well, what is E times G? Because E is the identity, this is just G. What is G times E? Because E is the identity, and we demanded for the identity the property from both sides, this is also equal to G, and therefore, well, if you want to be very fancy because of the transitivity of equality, this is equal to this. Right? And please don't hesitate asking if something is not clear here. It looks, the hard part is in some way how to write it down. And to stick to only the things which we are allowed to do. Yes, I know it is tempting if it says HG there to just assume that this is the same as GH, because that's what you've done for 10 years or longer since you learned first working with variables. But here it's not necessarily the case. So I'll get to you in a second. So it's just a practice basically in remembering the axioms and just sticking to the rules which you have. So, yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm keeping on is we don't have any information except that G is a group. So how?
Yes.
Oh, and because you've already said it's a group, we know that
G. Yes, okay. Yes. Because it is, I say it is a group. If it wasn't a group, I couldn't do some. And I could pick any group I wanted here. Okay. Second property is, if I have two elements, I need to show their product is in there, right? So let two elements, let's say I have H and K be elements in U, and I need to show that their product is in there, right? So how do I show that their product is in there? I need to show that the product commutes with this fixed element G, right? Because that's the defining property. So I want to show what happens if I take H times K and I multiply it with G, and in the end I would like to see that this is the same if I multiply G with the product H times K, right? Okay, what can I do here? I basically, since I don't know much, I just know it is a group. I can use the definition there, and I can use the group axioms. So I know, because of associativity, this is the same as H times K times G. And if you just want to forget about writing down parentheses, this is perfectly fine with me. So you don't need to write them down there. That's what associativity tells us. Right, now I have K times G there, and now I can use the fact that they are in there, because if H and K are in there, what can I conclude? I conclude that HG is GH, and KG is GK. So now I have a KG there, so KG I can write as GK. So this is HGK. Well, if you want, parenthesis around here, and then the next step would be to say, because it's associative, I can also put parenthesis around here. Now I have HG there. HG I know in there. HG is the same as GH. So this is GH times K. And that's by associativity is the same as this product. So if HG, if H and K both commute with G, also H inverse commutes with G. Okay. So that was property of product. So the only thing left, the only thing which I need to show is now the property for inverses, right? So let H be an element in this set, and what I want to show is that H inverse is in this set. And what does this mean? Let me write it actually down. I want that H inverse G is the same as G H inverse. Okay, so that's what I want to show. But what I have at the moment is simply that HG is the same as GH. Okay, so how can I bring this into this form? And what now comes, and that is the only part here which, if you see it for the first time, might look like a slightly, like a trick. But if you think about what I'm just doing in some way exactly the same thing as you've done for years when you solved equations for x or so. I have these expressions here. I want to get an expression H inverse G. So what I'm doing is I multiply with H inverse. So now multiply with H inverse. Okay, but since I have a group, multiplication from the left is not necessarily the same as multiplication from the right. So I need to specify how I want to multiply. And I say I multiply with H inverse from the left. What do I get there? I get H inverse times G times, H inverse times H times G is the same as H inverse times G times H. And why do I do this multiplication with H inverse from the left? Because here I have to get an H inverse G, I somehow need to bring an H inverse on the left side near a G. And the only G which I have on the left somewhere so I can put it on is this one here. Here I can't immediately put an H inverse there because I have this H which is standing in the way. So that's why I left multiply with H inverse. Okay. And here I have an H inverse H, which is the identity, so this is the same as G. Okay, so now I have brought an H inverse on the left of a G. Okay, and now I do the same thing again, but I multiply with H inverse from the right. So now, multiply with H inverse from the right. So I take this equality here, G is equal to H inverse GH. So I get G H inverse is the same as H inverse GH H inverse. H inverse is the identity, so this is H inverse G. Okay, and now I have it, well, the equality the other way around, but I've shown the equality which I wanted. So therefore, this set is always a subgroup. Yeah?
Does it require that capital G was not commutative?
It doesn't require that it is not commutative. The same thing holds if it, well, anything which I'm showing for, or almost anything which I'm showing for a non-commutative group will also hold for a commutative group.
Okay.
It's just if my group is commutative, all this X struggle here is basically not necessary because any element fulfills this. And so I'm testing a condition which is always true. So if the group is commutative, this is not a very interesting problem.
Do all groups have a centralizer?
In every group, every element has a centralizer, yes. I can do this for any group and any element. Great. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, and I'll see you on Monday.